In the great hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe. Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, Aquaman, and those three junior super friends, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog. Their mission, to fight injustice, to right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of For All Mankind, a Super Friends podcast. For All Mankind is a read-through show covering DC Comics' classic Super Friends series, which ran for 47 issues from 1976 to 1981. Proud member of the Fine Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Rob Kelly. And joining me this episode is my returning super friend, Chris Franklin. Hi, Chris, and welcome back to the Hall of Justice.
Thanks, Rob. I don't know if you noticed, but I have extra large heels on my boots. So am I really Chris Franklin? I don't know.
I did notice you were looming over me all of a sudden. It's very, very strange, but we'll see how it all pans out. I'm betting that you might be the Chris Franklin from a very old issue of Batman, but we'll discover that as we go on. Yes, Chris is talking about the plot of this issue of Super Friends, which is number 26, The Wonder Twins Battle of Wits. It is, of course, by E. Nelson Bridwell, Ramona Fraiden, and Bob Smith. It went on sale August 23rd, 1979. But before we get to the story, I got to ask you, Chris, what do you think of this cover?
Oh, I've always liked this cover. I bought this. I'll give you a little background on this issue. I bought this cover at the. I'm pulling a Michael Bailey here. I remember where I bought this comic, even though I was like 4 years old. Maybe not even was I even four? Yeah, I was four. I bought it at Convenient Food Mart here in Cynthiana, Kentucky, and my cousin Joe. He would pick me up and take me down to my grandparents' house on Thursday and Friday. On Monday through Wednesday, because my mom worked those days, but she was off Thursday and Friday, and I hadn't went to kindergarten yet. So I went down and stayed with my grandmother and later my grandfather when he retired. And so Joe would pick me up, and sometimes he would say, "Let's stop. Hey, you want to stop and get a comic book?" And we'd stop at Convenient, and I'd get a comic book and an icy.
Nice.
At like 8 o'clock in the morning, I'd be drinking an icy.
Good deal. That's good babysitting. That's just good babysitting.
Isn't that awesome? Yeah. And Joe's the one that took me and my sister to see Superman the movie too. So
man, this guy, he really had it.
Yeah. And he also brought me my first Pepsi glasses of Superman and Batman that were at Pizza Hut. So
oh my god, jeez. Wow, this guy was like an oracle. Holy,
yeah, I know. But no, so I saw this comic and I had to have it, you know, and I, because it's got Batman front and center on the cover, and I'm a Batman mark, and I didn't notice that he, you know, accidentally got into Ace Frehley's closet on the cover here. But yeah, it's you know, I love the kick to the face the guy's getting in the fish coming out of the bag. That's, you know, I mean, Ramona just, of course, it's Ramona Fraiden. Mm-hmm. She's very adept at drawing fish, right?
Of course, so. Of course. Did it for many years. Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, we've got the Wonder Twins pointing at Batman saying, "That's not the Batman." And there's a little blurb that says, can you spot the telltale clue that tipped off the Wonder Twins? And obviously, again, you'll be able to see this cover on the website, finewaterpodcast.com. You can see that Batman is wearing, yes, very Superfly-esque Bootsy Collins kind of shoes there. And that's the tip off that this is not really the real Batman, because what does he need that? In the background, we see Robin pasting another one of the crooks and Wonder Woman tying up two of them. So I have two different questions. I mean, as a cover, I think it's perfectly fine. It's not one of my favorites of Ramona Fraiden's, but Ramona, like a bad Ramona Fraiden cover. Well, first of all, that doesn't exist. But even like Ramona Fraiden's lesser covers are still great. You know, there's just like there's a floor that they won't sink below. Right. So like this is just a perfectly fine cover. You know, there's other ones that I like a lot more, but it's more obviously plot oriented, and that Batman is front and center with just the two of the other super friends in the background. But there's two things I wanted to ask you about. First of all, okay. This gang, that there are the crooks here. They are dressed in this kind of like ski mask, you know, jumpsuit thing, and they are orange and magenta, right? Mm-hmm. Now I will say, during all my years as a graphic designer, I haven't really had to do anything like that in a long time. I always loved that color combination. I always found a way to use magenta and orange whenever I could. I just thought it looked exciting and vibrant without being like too contrasty. Like I always tried to default in a lot of ways to a couple of basic contrasting color patterns. And that was one of my favorites. As a graphic designer, Chris, do you have like color patterns that you find yourself using in your work a lot just because you think it looks really cool?
You know, one thing I like to use blue and orange. I tend to kind of like, I don't know, I just like kind of like that color combo for the same reason. You know, it's that it kind of works that way, and they're like a or like a blue and a gold, you know, and mm-hmm. and I mean that, you know, I mean obviously those kind of work together more. But yeah, I always like these guys, and I get what you're saying. There's something striking about them. They mm-hmm. they feel like they should be some Hydra soldiers mm-hmm. or something. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's the color scheme that whoever colored Captain Atom would use for Major Force, you know.
Right, right.
Years later, the guy that, you know, created the women in the refrigerator thing, unfortunately. But I always liked these guys, that the fact that they just had looked like off the shelf ski masks too. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just look like 70s ski masks that, you know, I remember having masks like that as a kid. Yeah. You know, so they're just really sharp looking, like they should be. Well, of course they work for Cobra or something in right. the DC universe. So, yeah.
Right. I mean, these guys are all going to end up being a bunch of morts, but they are very striking. And I just, like I said, I've always loved, by the way, I love blue and orange as well. That's why we love the Salamander so much and the Global Guardians, yeah. that he's blue and orange, yeah. But I've always liked orange and magenta. I think it's a sharp combination. It just popped on me when I looked at me when I saw this cover. And then the other thing is the blurb at the top. It says, "We challenge you to identify the heroes and villains in the maddest masquerade ever." Now, of course, it is referring to the plot of this issue, which we'll get into in a moment. But, Chris, think of this. We are only two issues away from the classic Super Friends cover of the heroes and the monsters squaring off.
Yeah.
That like, wouldn't that blurb fit better on that cover than this one?
Yeah, the big Halloween issue.
The big Halloween issue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and come to turn, I mean, spoiler warning, people, the monsters aren't the real characters in that comic. Rip off. Yeah, it's like it's another damn tomahawk on us, you know. The tomahawk chop, that's what we need to start calling that, you know, when that happens. But you're right, it would. And one thing that always jumped out at me is that the Wonder Twins say they don't say that's not Batman. They say that's not the Batman.
The Batman. You
know? The Batman. It's like, it's, you know, that, which, you know, we've got a movie coming out called The Batman soon. So it in the 70s, you know, DC was, you know, doubling down on, you know, this is not, even though this is the Super Friends All Ages comic, this is not Adam West. No, he's the Batman now. Mm-hmm. He's a mm-hmm. grim avenger of the night. So call him the Batman, you know.
That was something that the whole the Batman, just Batman thing was always so inside to, like, just for us nerds. And then mm-hmm. I can remember during the 1989 movie, when that was such a pop culture sensation, David Letterman did a top 10, and it was like top Batman's top 10 pet peeves or something. And the number one was like, it's the Batman, not just Batman, damn it. And I was like, wow, that has actually popped through to the straights. You know, yeah. Like that's a thing that regular people know about now, not just a bunch of comic book nerds like myself know that it's the Batman.
Yeah, so almost makes weird. You wonder why Michael Keaton didn't say, I'm the Batman, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but right. Thing, that's the big scene, you know. So anyway, okay, all right, well, we've gone on enough diversions about Batman for this episode, except at least for now. I'll talk about the cover. So let's get right to the plot. As I mentioned, this issue came out on August 23rd, 1979. I had just turned 8 years old. The Super Friends are hurrying their way to the Colony Beach Aquarium, where a tip that a robbery is about to take place there. It's such a top priority that all five Super Friends are involved, as well as the Wonder Twins, who were on their way home from school. The tip turns out to be correct, but the Super Friends make quick work of the masked gunman, with the Wonder Twins remarking that they weren't even really needed. As the Super Friends depart, Batman invites Xana and Jaina to lunch the next day, an offer they accept. Batman then tells them that in the meantime, all the Super Friends will be busy so that the Wonder Twins should not try and contact them. We then see that this is not the real Batman. Later, the faux Batman and the other fake Super Friends are meeting in their hideout. The guy dressed as Batman, named Johnny Witts, reveals his plan to get revenge on his old foe. By pretending to be Batman and then making plans with the Wonder Twins, he will follow Xana and Jaina to wherever Batman's house is, thereby revealing his true identity. Meanwhile, Xana and Jaina walk home, wondering who those costumed people were. Sure, they were not the real Super Friends. They mentioned they and Batman had made plans to meet up with Marvin and Wendy the next day, something the fake Batman obviously didn't know. Next day, Xana and Jaina, dressed in their civilian IDs, ride their bikes through Gotham. They spot the fake Aquaman trailing them in a car, as well as the fake Wonder Woman. Nevertheless, they head for what looks like Wayne Manor, and Johnny and his gang meet up. They barge in, armed to the teeth, and quickly let loose on the man sitting in the study. Sure that he is dead, Johnny checks the body. No pulse, but no bruises either? Of course, that means this victim is really Superman. The Super Friends spring into action and make quick work of Johnny's gang. Realizing he's been had, Johnny Witts is at least happy he uncovered the secret ID of the Wonder Twins. Or did he? The Wonder Twins then enter, flanked by John and Joanna Fleming. Later at the Hall of Justice, we see that John and Joanna were Marvin and Wendy in disguise. The Super Friends have a good laugh that the Wonder Twins used their superior wits to outwit Johnny Witts. All right, Chris, what did you think of this story?
This is one of my favorite issues of Super Friends. I don't know what it is about it. There's panels in this comic that are just like burned into my memory, and we'll get to them as they come. So I am totally biased about this issue, but I think it's a lot of fun. I think it's the most violent comic ever put together for young children, which we'll get to. Yeah, it's amazing, actually. But it's a ton of fun. It was cool to see. Yes, even I'm admitting it was cool to see Marvin. It was cool to see Wendy and Marvin again. So that was a nice bonus too. And I knew who Wendy and Marvin were from the early Super Friends comics, and seeing, you know, I don't know if I saw their version of the Super Friends. I know I didn't see it when they originally aired because I was born in 74. So I might have caught the, you know, I was an infant when they were first on, but I had caught reruns of their episodes. So I knew who they were. I had the Super Friends sheet set that they were on and the coloring book. So it was fun to see them. You know, I was like, oh, okay, they're still part of this, you know? So yeah, this is just, it's a nice done in one. And it's another case of ENB calling back to a very obscure Batman character that we'll talk about too. So
yeah, when I did the research for this and I learned that Johnny Witts was in fact a villain from a previous Batman issue, in fact he first appeared in Batman number 201, so you're talking a while ago, it was one of those things where I was surprised but not surprised, because it's, yeah, like, well, it's E. Nelson Bridwell, of course, that, you know, of course he didn't just make up a character. He plumbed the depths of the DC library and found an old villain that nobody was using and decided to bring him back. You know, it's like, that's so totally on brand for ENB. So yeah, why, I'm not surprised at that at all.
He made three appearances in the Silver Age, Detective 344, Batman 192, and Batman 201. And all of those were written by Gardner Fox. So, so this is, you know, this is a JLA based comic. So he's mined Gardner Fox's JLA stories before, so it makes sense he'd mine his Batman stories too, I guess.
Yeah, why not? So I love the splash page of the Super Friends all running down the street. Of course, they're all keeping pace with each other, which means Superman is flying extra slow, so he doesn't make Batman and Robin feel bad. I mean, you know, Aquaman, I would say our Aquaman can run faster than Batman and Robin just because he does have some superpowers, but Superman and Wonder Woman are really faking it to let, right, Batman take the lead there, but it's okay. And then we get to the sequence at the aquarium, and we get Wonder Woman does the bullets and bracelets bit. Superman smashes through some wood, which is great. And then you've got, of course, the sequence where one of the crooks is leaning over this manta ray tank and electric rays, and Aquaman commands them to zap him with their electric, you know, with their electricity coming out of the tank. And, you know, again, it's Ramona Fraiden, and Ramona Fraiden's style was, of course, so gentle and sweet that it, you know, it never got too violent. But man, it really looks like it hurts when that guy gets wailed, because it's colored in all red. He's got these monochromatic, and it really looks like they're really wailing on the guy.
Yeah, it does. It looks extremely painful, and it's colored by Adrienne Roy, and Ryan and I like to point it out when we covered her. Of course, she colored the Batman comics for decades. She loved to show oranges and reds, like to have this guy, and it always sold when there was fire, when there was electricity, and it's just so evocative. And Aquaman's in blue, so it shows that, you know, he's cool and comfortable while this guy's getting fried, which is, yeah. But, you know, one thing I think is funny, you know, we know now after you read the story that these aren't the real Super Friends. And Johnny later explains that he got these gadgets, which we'll get into how he got those gadgets. But he's got these gadgets that, you know, repel bullets and, but I mean, how much is he paying these crooks? Because, you know, just to literally, like, okay, you can shoot at me. I think this thing's going to work. Really? I mean, you know, I'm just like, wow. He must have, like, really promised them a lot. That's all I got
to
say. I
mean, these villains always have, like, unlimited resources. That's always the way it works. You can pay these guys to do this stuff. Yeah. It's easy kind of to forget that these are not the real Super Friends because the action is so fun. I love that the fake Superman is just standing there and Robin and Wonder Woman are knocking two crooks into him. And because he's Superman, they knock themselves out, which is great.
He's not the real Superman. So wouldn't that still hurt?
Yeah. And so then we get the panel of Batman kicking the guy and we see that he has got this extra thick boot. And of course that looks a little strange and it's, you know, just the one panel and we do see Zan looking at him, but we don't, you know, he doesn't go, there's no like, or anything like that. So it's like, if you're a kid, you probably just blow right by it. Although, of course, the cover already tipped you off. So then we get the next panel, and I love the floor is littered with like six of these guys just laying there unconscious. That's really fantastic. And then we get to the scene where Batman says, "Let's have lunch the next day," and that's where we get our first indication that something is up because Jaina goes, "Why? That'd be fine, Batman." Like she's like, "What is that about?" And then the Super Friends disperse, and then we get that great panel of Johnny Witts as Batman, and he's got that, he's like, "So far, so good. The real Batman is good as dead." I mean, he's just like leaning into the evil guy thing.
I love that panel. I mean, that all Ramona did was change the way she drew Batman's eyes and his teeth, and it reads evil. Mm-hmm. And it almost looks like Wally Wood-esque. There's a Wally Wood-ness about that, I just love it. I just love that panel. He just looks so seedy, you know?
So then we get back to their hideout. By the way, again, I love Ramona Fraiden. I love the detail of their hideout that you see on the wall behind them. Like there's pieces of plaster that have come loose. I love that. Like this is just kind of like a rundown place. You know, it does say a criminal hideout in Gotham, but I mean, it's not a nice place. They're in like, and there's like a picture frame and we see it's kind of askew. So like they're staying in like a crappy place, which is, again, a nice, I don't know whether that's E. Nelson Bridwell or just Ramona threw that in, but I thought that's a great detail that they're in kind of like, you know, a dive.
Yeah, it really looks like a rundown hotel or something like that. And the top panel on page 5 with them taking off their disguises, that is one of those that's just etched in my brain because I think when I first got this, I couldn't read, you know, I was like 4 years old. So I think I was like, before my mom like read the story to me later, I was sitting there trying to figure out, what is going on here? Why is Superman like, why has he got a face in his hands? And that's not really Superman. And why is Robin taking his hair off? And, you know, I think I figured it out pretty quickly, but, you know, cause I, you know, seen characters impersonated in other things before, but it's still just it's an odd image, you know, just the, you know, Aquaman's taking his blonde hair off and Wonder Woman's holding her face. And I mean, you know, to a kid, it's weird. And another thing I love is just how thuggish everybody looks. But I mean, Aquaman doesn't. He honestly looks like Ramona's Bruce Wayne later. Yeah, he does, honestly. Yes. Yeah. But the rodeo lady playing Wonder Woman, she's got like bags under her eyes. She's not bad looking, but she looks just like she's hard. You know, she's like some, you know, she probably sounds like she smokes 25 packs of cigarettes a day. I just imagine, you know.
And why the elaborate masquerade?
Yeah, yeah, right about it. Yeah, just like, you know, and then Superman, he's, you know, he's got like a real pronounced nose and sunken
cheeks. He's kind of snarling a little bit. Like he looks a little like he's like, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just, and Johnny just looks smarmy as hell through this whole book. But it's, yeah, she does a great job with, you know, Ramona's a lot like Dick Sprang in a way that, you know, all the characters, you know, when she drew criminals, they always, they were almost, they weren't Dick Tracy level and not quite to the Dick Tracy level that Dick Sprang drew, but they had a lot of character, and that character read crook. You know, just look at him and go, okay, that's a crook. You know, mm-hmm.
Can you imagine what a Dick Sprang Super Friends comic would have looked like? Oh man.
Oh my gosh. They should have got him at one point, you know, yeah. I mean, he came back in the late '80s, but it was a little too late after the Super Friends. Yeah.
We love Ramona, but man, that would have been amazing. So then, Johnny Witz explains his plot, and we see that he folds his leg at one point, and we see that he's got the giant boot on, and then right in the next very next panel we see that, you know, Xana Jaina have figured it out, and it, you know, I'm hard on Xana Jaina. I, you know, I make no bones that I like Wendy and Marvin better. I know that you feel differently, but I like that the Wonder there's never even a moment that the Wonder Twins were fooled. I think that's a nice character bit for them, that when we see them again, they're like, I wonder who those costume people were. Like, so if you were a little kid and you were worried that the Wonder Twins weren't up to snuff, it's like, no, they were never fooled. And in fact, they were smart enough not to give it away. They were just kind of like nodding their head, like, okay, Batman, sure. And then the minute they walked away, they were like, those weren't the real Super Friends. So that's a nice little bit for them.
Yeah. Of course, the Wonder Twins in the comic, just like Marvin, are a lot smarter than their animated counterparts, especially, mm-hmm. especially the boys. The boys, both boys, were pretty dumb on the cartoon, but the comic version were way more intelligent. So.
So the Wonder Twins make it home, and they talk to Professor Nichols, and they change in their outfits as John and Joanna with the blonde wigs, and they get on their bikes, and they immediately notice, as I said, that the fake Super Friends are trailing them. Like, we see the fake Aquaman in a car and the fake Wonder Woman, and the panel with the fake Wonder Woman where she's in the car and she's got her like walkie talkie. That's the kind of thing you were just talking about, Chris, where her face is kind of pinched. Like, she looks angry.
Yeah.
You know, so you can say she's kind of like a gun mall type thing. And again, I like the misdirect because we see them pedaling their bikes, and then they head to what, if you're not paying super close attention, clearly looks like Wayne Manor.
Yeah.
Like, it's clear. I mean, it's exactly, now, of course, you know, rich mansions all kind of look the same, but they don't expressly say it anywhere. But if you're not kind of paying super close attention, you would think, oh no, they've showed up at Wayne Manor.
Yeah. I mean, they never, that's the weird thing about this. And I went back and reread it to make sure. They never say, hey, this is Bruce Wayne's house or anything like that. Right. And Johnny, being a Gotham City criminal, he ought to know who Bruce Wayne is, you know?
Yep.
So yeah, they never say that, but of course later the disguise Superman wears sure looks like Bruce Wayne, and we even see a butler that sure looks like Alfred. So, mm-hmm. So I don't know if they actually set this up at Wayne Manor, or did they set it up at another house, or I'm assuming they set it up at Wayne Manor, because who else would let them do this?
But, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, so, I mean, rich guys maybe helping other rich guys out. That might be something.
Well, that's true. And I'm guessing in this continuity, Wayne Manor is not 14 miles from Gotham City, because that would be a heck of a bike ride for Xana Jaina. Yeah.
2 hours later. Like, okay, all right. And that leads to this full page shot, which is extraordinary for a couple of different reasons. First, Chris, you hinted at it, in that it is clearly one of the most violent images the Super Friends have ever had in a comic, because this guy that is sitting in the chair, who we expect to be Bruce Wayne, is simultaneously getting whacked in the head with a pipe of some sort. Then he's been noosed around his neck, shot with a harpoon, shot with a gun. And then I don't even know what the other guy is doing.
He's throwing a grenade at him.
Your grenade. On top of all that, a full page picture, which the Super Friends comic never did. Like, these stories by E. Nelson Bergwill were so tight. He had so much plot in a 17-page story that Ramona Freyden rarely had room to do a full-page shot and hear. And so it's kind of startling when you get to it, because it's just, it's, I think it's probably maybe the only full page Superman. Kurt Schaffenberg, I think, did the one with Superman a couple issues earlier where he subbed in, but it's pretty rare for Super Friends to do this. And again, on top of it, this guy is getting just completely destroyed.
Yeah. I mean, this, I mean, I guess I didn't think about this as a kid, but like looking at it now, I mean, it's so, I mean, there's, I mean, it's like the most horrible ways to die. He's experiencing five of them at the same time, and they're showing it, you know. I mean, they don't show the pipe going right into his head, but I mean, he's literally got the noose around his neck. Like you said, the harpoon's coming for his chest. Johnny's shooting him in the chest. The one guy that was robbing is, you know, he's blown up the back of his chair that's come through it to Bruce, fake Bruce's back. I mean, if anybody else had drawn this, it would have been not approved by the comic code. I mean, back in 1978, there's no way, or 79, there's no way. I mean, it's just that, like you said, Ramona's kind of gentle style makes it palatable for a child, but barely.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And the way she drew the head, the hair is kind of like, he's getting like knocked off his chair.
Yeah.
It's your blunt of the impact of all these things. So yeah, it's really an amazing image.
I don't know how they didn't hit each other either, though. That's the thing. Cause I mean, they're all within like 6 feet of, well, the two coming in the window aren't, but the others are like within 6 feet of each other. You know, they could catch COVID from one another. So yeah. I mean, that's how bad it
God.
Is.
Yeah. It's really, really amazing. And then of course, we realize in the next page what's going on, because they say, wait a minute, my crowbar is bent. And how come this guy doesn't have any bruises? And then, of course, he pops right up, pulls his costume off, and he reveals that he is Superman, which leads to the second full-page shot in this story. Again, so this must have been rare, and that E. Nelson Birdwell only had, like, 15 pages of plot for a 17-page story, when normally he has, like, 26 pages of plot. Because then we get another full-page shot of the Super Friends all coming in from different rooms, getting the drop on the five big guys. And again, it's a marvelous image. We get Aquaman and Robin coming in from the foreground, Batman and Wonder Woman in the background, and Superman, who of course is standing there. So again, it's a great flip image of the bad guys getting the drop on somebody, and now we're flipped it 2 pages later. The Super Friends have reversed the tables.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, you know, if you replaced, you know, you could have, if they replaced these guys in the middle with like some of their supervillains, this would have been a great poster. You know, yeah, I love it. Yeah. It's, you know, this is the type of, you can just imagine if this was on the cartoon that you'd hear the dun, 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 dun,
oh,
dun,
totally. Dun,
right. When this happened, you know, yeah.
It's great. It's as you say, if it had villains, that would have been a great poster. It really would have been, because they're all kind of looking iconic and stuff, especially Wonder Woman and Batman. They look fantastic. So then there's this little fight. Superman takes one of the guys and literally smashes his head into the ceiling, which means he probably broke his neck. Robin punches a guy in the gut. Aquaman gets a good line. He says, "For a minnow like you, I don't need any finny help," knocking that guy out. Wonder Woman grabs the fake Wonder Woman and throws her around with her magic lasso. And then Batman, using his non-Chris boots, kicks Johnny Witts over. And then, of course, Johnny Witts is like, well, you know, at least I learned the secret identity of the Wonder Twins, which, I don't know, is that, you know, I talk about making lemonade out of lemons, you know? I mean, it's like, is that really that big of a victory, Johnny Witts? And then even then, he doesn't even get that.
Yeah, he was wrong the whole time. But I will say, again, Ramona's Johnny in the bottom left corner on page 5, that panel 3, that is one of the smarmiest looking people I've ever seen in a comic book. He just looks like he is so just greasy, you know? I mean, oh, man, he is oily. But he's wrong. They faked him out.
I was wrong. I was dead wrong all along. So, yep, there you go, Johnny Witts. And then back at the Hall of Justice, we, of course, reveal that John and Joanna were Wendy and Marvin, which we tipped earlier. So this is their first appearance back in the Super Friends since they left the book. And we get to see another shot of Jaina's marvelous charm bracelet featuring the five logos of the characters, which, as we've talked about in previous episodes, they really needed to make that as a thing you could have bought.
Yeah, I would have bought that. I mean, yeah. I don't know what I would have done with it, but I would have bought it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go completely. I would love the little S shield, little R, little A. That would have been just fantastic. But so, yeah, we see that's Wendy and Marvin, and it's great. It's fun to have them all together and keep some sort of continuity that, you know, Wendy and Marvin are still exist and stuff. It's great. And then Gleek gives Jaina a big hug, and they kind of just big celebrate in the final panel. Everybody's happy that the Wonder Twins use their brains to outwit Johnny Witt. So overall, it's just a really solid, fun one and done.
Yeah, it's great. The kids, you know, all four kids really show that they got the right stuff to be superheroes. And you know, I think it's interesting that Ramona draws Wendy and Marvin differently. She's not trying to ape the animation model sheets now. They look human. Especially Marvin, he looks human, you know, now he looks just like a normal guy with Marvin's haircut, you know, which I think they've grown up. They've grown out of their awkward teen phase that they, that they were in the Super Friends cartoon. So, I love the ending. It's just fun. I think that's why it stood out to me over the years was, you know, it's a little bit, it's got that, it's, you know, there's other issues that are probably more, they're splashier. They've got actual super villains and things. But I didn't even know as a kid that Johnny Witts was a Batman villain. At some point, I figured that out. But it's just a fun issue. It's a good example of you could hand this to somebody and say, hey, no, the Super Friends comic was pretty clever, you know, and it was fun and give it to them, and they probably be like, oh, okay, you know, this wouldn't be a bad issue to like try out somebody on that they never read the book and never gave it a chance. So, yeah.
And you could see this being an episode of the show because the show loved to kind of give the Wonder Twins more to do, kind of make them front and center a little bit. And because, I mean, it was meant for kids and, you know, they wanted the teenager characters to always kind of learn something. So you could totally see this being an episode of at the end with like, oh yeah, the Wonder Twins were, as you say, they had the right stuff. They were good enough the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing is that, you know, probably some kid would have had to like, I know, been picked up as a hitchhiker or, you know,
yeah, that's right.
They decided to take an airplane out for a joyride and then they didn't know how to fly it or they ran out of fuel or something, you know, that's the teen trouble alert, you know, that's
petting a strange dog or something like that. So, the only other thing from this comic I want to mention is on the letters page, and there is a letter from someone named Vivek Dahlia from Ottawa, Ontario. And Vivek, I don't know whether that's a male or female name, but anyway, Vivek says, as usual, the triumphant two, Supes and Wonder Woman, dominate the cover and the book. Had the dynamic duo and the Sea King abandon the others? Come on! And so, and then ENB responds with, frankly, we thought Aquaman, Batman, and Robin did pretty well that issue, but the Sea King was the hero number 24, and he's the star of the next issue, which we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I'm always happy when some letter writer is always sort of sticking up for Aquaman being in the book more.
Well, that book probably came out, let's see, this is 79. So when that issue came out, Superman was a movie star and Wonder Woman was a TV star.
There you go.
So, you know, I mean, hey, it's not as bad as when Batman dominated every Justice League cover in the 60s.
That's right.
And Robin every Teen Titans cover, you know, so... Yeah.
I always appreciate that, though. There's always some fan out there after my own heart that they're rooting for rooting for Aquaman.
We're watching out for him. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it's just a really fun issue. As you say, it's not as splashy. It doesn't feature, like, you know, Drax and his time bomb or anything like that, you know, or the Global Guardians doing crazy things, but or aliens that are like M.C. Escher paintings or whatever. But it's just, you know, it's kind of a low-level crook. Of course, who do you think, hero-wise, I think it's kind of obvious who came out best as the best friend. I mean, would you argue it's the Wonder Twins?
Oh, yeah. I think it's got to be them because, I mean, they basically, they just, you know, asked for the Super Friends for the last-minute assist. They had it all figured out. I mean, they you know, roped in Wendy and Marvin. So, yeah, this might be their best showing in the whole series. I don't know, but it's probably one of them. So.
Yep. Yep. And then the villain roundup, Johnny Witts, this was his last appearance, as far as I know. So, I mean, but obviously he existed outside the DC universe before. I mean, he doesn't have much to him. He's not a costume crook or anything. He's just a supposedly smart crook. I mean, you got to admit that the plan is kind of good and that he found a way to like duplicate Super Friends' powers and find like he sets up, it's a big setup. It just doesn't work. But I mean, I don't know, on paper, it's kind of a good plan.
Yeah, I still wonder, he said, you know, he was in prison with supervillains like Luthor and they shared their secrets. I don't see Lex sharing his secrets with anybody, any version of Lex Luthor.
Right.
but somehow he figured this stuff out. But yeah, I think Johnny, you know, he was from that period in the New Look Batman pre-TV show where they were, you know, grounding things. And there were a lot of plainclothes criminals like the Getaway Genius and Johnny here. And they would bring in the classic villains occasionally, but after the TV show took off, then they brought the classic villains back a lot. But yeah, so he's from that period where they were trying to ground Batman after all the aliens and strange transformations, in the Jack Schiff era. So yeah, I'm surprised, you know, I'm surprised Grant Morrison didn't do something with it at some point, you know, dug up everybody else. But
considering we now know the running time of the Batman movie, Johnny Witts might even show up in that. I don't know. They got a lot of time to fill.
Yeah, he might. He's like, you know, it's like when you go to the restroom, that's when Johnny Witts is going to be on screen for like 2 minutes. You know,
played by some Oscar-winning actor or something like that. That is Super Friends number 26. But of course, Chris, since you're here, we have to do another installment of For All Merch Kind. We haven't done one in a little while, and I've missed doing those segments with you. So you're here. So we're going to talk about a piece of Super Friends merchandise. Now, since this issue kind of leans heavily on Batman, it's a Batman villain, and Batman's the one in disguise, and he's on the cover. This is, we're going to talk about a Batman-centric piece of Super Friends merchandise. And this is something that you found and sent to me. It is a Bat Space Man magnetic maze chase game that just happens to have the word Super Friends stuck at the bottom of it. You'll be able to see this again on the website, findwaterpodcast.com. Do you have this, or did you just find this graphic and send it to me?
I just found the picture. I don't have it, but it is made by NASTA, who made those other magnetic games that we've talked about that I do own. And they made a lot of, in the sunglasses, NASTA is like, this podcast sponsored by NASTA, who's probably not in business anymore. But yeah, I don't own this. And when I saw it, I'm like, what is this thing? Because when you first look at it, it's a really strange maze with all these black and white graphics lifted from actual Batman comic books.
Yeah.
It's weird. What did you think about it?
I mean, first of all, I don't know what you're supposed to do exactly with this thing. It says on instructions on the back, and of course we don't have the instructions, so I don't exactly know. But man, the images that they've chosen for this game. First of all, the card is, what is that just Murphy Anderson, or is that Carmen Infantino and Murphy Anderson?
That's Infantino and Anderson.
The classic shot of Batman on his rope swinging, and he looks very friendly. I find the space between Bat and Man to be kind of confounding, because again, as a graphic designer, that logo would have come over as one piece. So like somebody chose to split that up and separate it, and no one calls him that. No, it's Batman. Nobody calls him Batman. It's Batman. Like, well, so why would you do that?
I think what that is that's from the Batman logo. That's Batman's head is usually.
Of course.
Partially in between Batman. Yeah. So they took the bat silhouette off, but didn't move the letters together, the T and the M. So yeah, he's Bat, not even hyphen man. He's Bat Spaceman, as you said. So
very strange. And then the artwork used in this game. I mean, it's hard to see a little bit because it's kind of a fuzzy image and I blew it up as best I could, but I mean, I can see Man Bat and the Scarecrow and Ra's al Ghul. Kind of some very strange. I mean, these are all lifted from comic covers. I recognize that Scarecrow from an issue of Detective Comics. Very, very strange set of images to pick for a kid's Batman game.
I can tell you where most of them are from, because I'm OCD about that stuff. So the Adams Giordano woman is Dolores Muerto from The Secret of the Waiting Graves, the first Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams story, Detective 395. Also the wolf that you see there from that story. The Adams Giordano Ra's al Ghul is from his cover debut on Batman 232.
Right, the one where Robin's getting shot.
Yeah, exactly. Adams Giordano Man Bat's from Detective number 402, right after he got his wings and started flying. We've got two Marshall Rogers and Terry Austin Jokers from the interior and the cover of Detective 475 and a Laughing Fish from that same comic. There's an Infantino Giella Scarecrow, as you said, that's from the cover of Batman 189. And then the house that you see is Gothos Mansion from The Demon of Gothos Mansion.
Oh, wow.
By Irv Novick and Dick Giordano from Batman 227. There's some other ones that I didn't have time to identify. I don't know where that image of the Riddler came from. I could not source that. He looks very strange. He's missing the big giant question mark on his chest. I could not source that one. So if you guys know where it's at, I don't know who this screaming head is that you see over on the right-hand corner. And there's some other odd objects and images that it's really weird. Why not they use the stock art of Batman from the classic Infantino Anderson. Why not put the Joker, that Joker image that goes with that, and the Penguin where he's floating down on his umbrella, and the Riddler where he's pointing down, you know, that from that series of posters that Mego used, that they used on those Pepsi glasses. Why did they, who dug through these comic books for these images? And why, you know?
And why are they in black and white? Why are they in black, white, and like heavy gray? So they're kind of hard to see. I don't know. it's confounding.
It is. It's a really strange, like, it almost looks like something that you would see mocked up in a catalog.
Yes.
But was not released this way. But apparently it was released this way. Yep. So. Yep.
And then, as we said, it just says Super Friends down at the bottom, which makes me think that this was, I guess, like a Batman piece of merchandise that they had either lying around or they were producing it. And then the Super Friends got kind of big and popular. And so they were like, oh, we can tie this in the Super Friends. So we just slap Super Friends down at the bottom, even though it's not the Super Friends logo. It's just some type. I mean, it's really kind of like the laziest. Like, oh, yeah, Super Friends. There, just put it down at the bottom. There, it's Super Friends. It's like, well, there's no other Super Friend in this thing. It's just Batman. But nevertheless, it does say Super Friends down at the bottom.
Yeah, it's not even the logo that NASA used on other Super Friends stuff, which wasn't really the Super Friends logo, but it was kind of similar to the World's Greatest Super Friends season, that logo when the show title came up. So, it's not the arched Super Friends logo you see on the comic. It's just like a bubbly serif font, you know. So it's
very 70s. Very 70s.
It is, yeah. It's almost, it's not quite hobo standard, but it's close to it. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a Batman Magnetic Maze Chase game. Of course, it'll be interesting to see if when we go searching these on the internet, if, like, was there a Superman Magnetic Maze Chase game? Was there a Wonder Woman? I'm sure there was no Aquaman Chase game. He didn't get that level of merchandising love, but it's kind of, you know, Superman was a movie, as you just talked about. Superman was a movie star. Wonder Woman was a TV star. So it would make sense that there might be those versions of this game for those characters. And then that makes me think, well, what does that artwork look like? Like, what comics were they pulling from? Kurt Swan, and like,
got to be a lot of Kurt Swan, because, you know, he drew every Superman comic there for 40 years. So it's got to be a ton of Kurt Swan. Yeah.
The Wonder Woman one probably has like shots of her when she was in her mod outfit, you know, like with I Ching and stuff or something. So
it probably does. Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll find those at some point. But again, you can check this out over on the website on the gallery page. So big thanks to Chris. Thank you so much for sending this over. I never knew this existed, this piece. So I was very happy to see it.
I didn't either, and I can't even remember how I came across it now, because it's been a few months ago. So if it might have been something, some chain I followed from something our buddy Brian Heiler posted. So if it's something Brian posted, thanks, Brian. You know, yeah, if it's
absolutely
not, thank whoever pointed me in that direction, because I unfortunately don't remember. But yeah, I had never seen it before. So
actually, Chris is going to stick with us for the next issue of Super Friends, which is going to be coming out next month. So he's going to be sticking around doing it. This is not a two-parter, because these are two separate stories, but Chris is going to be here next month as well. But in the meantime, of course, Chris, you know, you're all over the network. Why don't you tell people where they can, what shows you're working on here for the Fire and Water Network?
Well, by the time this drops, it shouldn't be too long before JLU Cast returns.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we're doing a little pre-game warm up for Justice League Unlimited. We're actually going to start covering the Justice League Unlimited version of the series, but we've got a special episode coming out with two special guests. We're talking about some early team ups on the animated series. So be on the lookout for that. And then we will get into Justice League Unlimited proper. I'm very, very excited because I love Justice League, but I love the Unlimited version like twice as much. So I'm really excited for it.
That's going to be very exciting. Yeah, I love that. I mean, as you said, I love the early iteration of the show, but Justice League Unlimited to me is where it's at, you know? So
yeah.
That's super exciting. You guys going to be able to finally get to those episodes. So, well, Chris, thank you once again for stopping by, man. You know, I always love having you here on the show.
Thanks for having me, Rob. And I will try to walk out in these high heels, but I'm not very good at it. So Cindy tried to teach me, but I'm just no good at it. So if I fall over, just I'll pick myself up eventually. Just let me go.
That's a, why do we fall, Chris? To learn to pick ourselves back up. So, okay, everybody, I want you to stay tuned. I'm going to run some podcast promos. And when I come back, I'm going to do some listener feedback.
Hey, Ryan, I know we're taking a break from Batman Nightcast, but I've been thinking about the Nightfall storyline where Jean-Paul Vallée temporarily took over the role of Batman.
I see where you're going with this. If you were ever paralyzed, I would be honored to take care of Cindy and your kids.
No, that's not where I was going. I was thinking about all the many characters who have filled in for Bruce Wayne as Batman over the years. Dick Grayson, Tim Drake.
Commissioner Gordon, for some reason.
Yeah, that did happen. Anyway, on the subject of temporary replacements.
Your son Andrew is going to take over Supermates?
No, focus on Batman. Why is this so hard? While we're away from Nightcast for a while longer, someone could come in and do a Batman-related show for the Fire and Water Network.
Well, I know Paul Keen loves the Batman Family comic book.
I've seen Sean M. Myers post a few things about Batman Family, too.
Do you think they'd...
We'll do it! For those of you who aren't familiar with the series, Batman Family was a DC comic that ran for 20 issues from 1975 to 1978, and then rescued Detective Comics from the DC implosion by continuing as a dollar comic for 15 more issues until 1980.
The title started out with new features starring Batgirl and Robin, along with reprints before morphing into all new stories starring other members of the Batman family, such as the Huntress, Commissioner Gordon, Man-Bat, and even Ragman and the Demon.
So you're all invited to the Batman Family Reunion Podcast, taking over the Batman Nightcast feed.
Coming in January to the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
This could be the sensational podcast find of 2022.
If Monday's bad or Tuesday's sad, make a Saturday.
That's a Sunday.
If Wednesday rains or Thursday's gray, make a Saturday.
Looks like a Sunday.
Instead of half a banana and a pineapple ring, add yogurt creamy smooth. Pop a grape on top and that's a Saturday for you. Make a weekend treat any day of the week. Make a Saturday.
Now that's a Saturday.
And we're back with listener feedback, and this is the feedback we got for the previous episode of For All Mankind, episode 25, with my guest, super friend Tim Price. First up, got a comment from Clinton Robinson, who says, somewhere out there is an alternate universe where young Rob Kelly used the Seraph action figure to destroy many robot boxes, a.k.a. Transformers. Sphinx Jaina sold separately. I want to go to there, as Tina Fey would say, Clint. Edo Boznar says, oh yeah, this is the one with the future Global Guardians. It's etched into my memory, especially the confrontations between them and the various super friends. And in that regard, the big throwdown between Wonder Woman and Nubia is particularly memorable. Also, looking at the gallery page, there's one other thing about that page that I remember after all these years. The odd hatching / shading on Nubia's face in the second panel makes it look like she has a beard, or at least a 5 o'clock shadow. And I love the scenes with Aquaman at the end, both him using his hair to block GL's energy bolt, and then Mira bonking him with the water fist. Ron McCarthy says, I think to get Comics Code approval, we were supposed to assume that the puppets defeated the Overlord somehow. I think that's a reach, Rob, but it makes as much sense as anything else that happens in that last panel. Paul Ken from our network says, another great episode and really enjoyed hearing Tim. I have to check out the Outcasters now, so your crossover worked. I have to admit, I saw spot for the Underling / Overlord since he was in my first ever podcast. I left out loud at the green flame trying to flying by expelling fire from her nose. I also think Seraph is a cool-looking character. Would have liked to have seen him more for sure and would have bought a Remco figure for sure. And finally, the blocking Jail's ring with blonde hair is pretty lame when I was a kid and is another reason why it was a good idea to get rid of the yellow weakness. And have to love all the 70s fashions on the civilian IDs. Cellar Dweller says, thanks to Rob and Tim for a great podcast. Hope everyone had a great holiday season. Would have to agree with Rob. The best friend goes to Seraph, perhaps with a nod to Mira as well. Seeing Xan and Jaina recover their senses after changing their forms is a trope used in the cartoon as well. There are a few episodes where they were hypnotized and Gleek would bring their hands together and their extra energy would break the spell. As for Jaina becoming a mythical beast, she's done that at least twice in the cartoon. In Battle of the Gods, she became a griffin, and in Terror from the Phantom Zone, she became a winged horse. Ramona Freyden always does great work, but I love the outfit she gave Nubia, and the 70s fashions were just too funny. See you on the next podcast. That's two votes for the super mod 70s fashions. Dr. Chris Lewis says, so let's discuss shooting fire out of your nostrils thing. Fans of Douglas Adams will recognize that The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy got there around the same time when the Golga Frinchem, is that right, market researchers decided to focus group the idea of a nasally fitted fire. He even sends a YouTube link. Fire must have her nose and mouth lined with asbestos because, boy, would fire down the nose smart. But as Tim pointed out, the direction of the force is really weird. I'm not so worried about Green Fury's core strength to avoid melting her toes. It's neck muscle strength she's going to need. Blasting fire out of your nose is going to kick your head backwards like a kind of reverse whiplash injury. It might amuse the kids, but for me, flaming snot is a comic book science fail. Thank you so much, Chris, for taking this whole thing way too seriously. Tim Price, of course, was a guest in the very episode, writes back, that explanation smells good to me. I like your nose for science. Speaking of bad jokes, Dr. Ange is next, and he says, for some reason, I've always had a soft spot for the globe crown the Overlord wears. I want one. I always sort of dismissed the Super Friends as a kid's comic, but seeing Fury fly by shooting flames at her nose definitely made me say, this ain't Action Comics. Thanks for reviewing this and allowing me to revisit it in my head. You're very welcome, Ange. Little Russell Burbage says, great comic equals great podcast. Nice job, fellas. I always loved this issue. I read it right around the time that I read Secret Origins of DC Superheroes, edited by Danny O'Neill, which featured Nubia, but no Aquaman, Lord have mercy. With that in this issue, I always thought that Nubia was a bigger deal than she evidently was. I would have liked to have seen her more. Nice to know she is a strong supporting character in the current Wonder Woman mythos. Loved seeing Mira and Aqualad drawn by Ramona Freyden. In fact, I love that whole bit where Aquaman held his own against his teammates. So if we think about it, this scene means that Aquaman is stronger than Green Lantern. Or maybe just smarter. I also like the Overlord, but I appreciate that he would have been more menacing if his uniform was dark blue or even black. A magenta leotard doesn't scream World Conqueror. As for the ending, I expected him to come back with another Puppet Master type plot. I was disappointed that this never happened and that the puppet's voice scene was never explained. It would have been cool if he'd been schizophrenic or had heard voices for some other reason, maybe the Atom. I would have liked to have seen him get taken down by the Elementals or whatever that group was called, who had a hand in taking down Overlord 1. As for distribution and subscriptions, I remember always seeing issues of Super Friends at the bookstores where I bought comics, as in, like they never sold. I had a bad feeling about the book, especially in that last year. I think there were always unsold issues in the spinner racks, unfortunately. And I subscribed to JLA and Legion of Superheroes for years. My first issue was JLA 114 back in 74. They started out folded up, which is why you can sometimes find older issues of books with the crease down the middle. Those are subscription copies. Then the issues got mailed flat in a thicker brown paper wrappers, I think old grossy paper bags. And then eventually they were in plastic sleeves with thin cardboard boards with your address label stuck on them. I eventually stopped my subscriptions when I found bookstores got the issues reliably and more quickly than I did in the mail. But I never missed an issue and none of them were ever terribly damaged. When I lived in Japan, I subscribed to many titles because that was the only way I could stay sort of up to date with the books I wanted. Peter David's Aquaman, JLE, 5 years later, LSH, etc. They always arrived in pretty good condition, too. Although I did get somebody else's book by mistake once, I sent it on to him, and that was the beginning of a beautiful pen pal friendship that continues to this day. That's amazing, Russell. That's a wonderful story. Sean Myers, again from This Network, says, hello, Tim. Welcome to the podcast. Your enthusiasm is evident in your voice. Great job. At first, I was a bit sad because I wasn't able to listen to this episode as soon as it came out, December 26th. But couldn't get to it until January 3rd, but luckily, we got a snowstorm that day, so I was able to listen while shoveling the sidewalk in front of the house, so you helped me tremendously. As far as Batman defeating Green Lantern, I think that most of it was down to the surprise attack aspect of it. JL certainly wasn't wary of Batman the way he would have been if Evil Star or Dr. Polaris had materialized in the JLA satellite. Yes, because Evil Star is so terrifying. I often hear you guys talk about newsstand distribution being spotty at the time. I hadn't realized how lucky I had it. I grew up in Spring Grove, Pennsylvania, a very small rural town. Our nearest city was York, about 20 minutes away from Spring Grove. York is about 40 minutes from Harrisburg to give listeners some kind of reference point. In Spring Grove, I had two options, Rutter's, a local 7-Eleven, and Uffelman's Newsstand. Uffelman's is where I got a vast majority of comics, and it's the location where I longingly stared at the Super Friends Treasury Edition one Sunday afternoon after they had closed. Oh, in York, the best place to get comics was the locally owned Bookland chain of stores. There were three in York, and they had a fantastic selection of comics. At the time, I was really into Super Friends, the two digest titles, Best of DC and DC Special Blue Ribbon Digest, Batman Family, isn't there a new podcast about that book? Superman Family, Flash, DC Comics Presents, JLA, and then other one-off specials and individual issues that caught my eye. Of the titles that I bought regularly each month, I never remember missing an issue, though perhaps that was because I have at least five different locations to browse from. That just warmed the cockles of my heart, John, you listening all these great stories. And it makes me think maybe that would be a subject for an FW Presents, where like a bunch of us talk about the comics, where we got comics as a kid. I know that Shag and I have covered that on Fire and Water occasionally, but I would love to hear from all of you about the different stores that you found your comics. Maybe that's something we'll do one day, because I was very charmed at the description you had of these stores. Chris Franklin, of course, from this episode and from our network, says, poor Green Lantern, that silly yellow weakness has always set him up for some really embarrassing defeats. My favorite was in New Teen Titans number 4, when Robin wrapped his yellow cape around his fist and knocked Hal the you-know-what out. Let's not mention Robin painting himself yellow in the god-awful All-Star Batman and Robin, though. I missed this issue as a kid, so when Green Fury / Flame showed up in a later issue, I wondered where I had missed her in that initial Global Guardians debut, which started in number 7. Seraph was one of the Global Guardians with the most potential for sure. The Warlord line would have been great for him, but as I think I mentioned before, I could see someone using the Mego-like Bible figures to kit-bash a pretty accurate figure to go with the Mego superheroes. Might make for a great future custom project. Get on that, Chris. I didn't realize Mira appeared in this issue, so I assumed that Ramona's first stab at her was number 27, the Big Aquaman issue. I recently gifted Cindy an original sketch of Mira by Ramona, and she in turn got me a sketch of Batman by her. Cindy rounded it up by buying herself a Wonder Woman sketch, so we have a Frayden gallery now. That is awesome, and I guarantee you will get to see those sketches next month. And then finally, Martin Gray says, thanks for another terrific show, boys. The likening of Overlord number 2 to Liberace was brilliant. Like Ange, though, I like his look. The way he incorporates the globe into his crown is like ancient Egypt's crown of the three kingdoms. Yeah, it's exactly like that. So, thanks, everybody, for the comments. I very much appreciate it. And so that is going to do it for this episode of For All Mankind. Big thanks to my pal Chris Franklin for coming by. And like I said, he'll be back next month to talk about number 27, which we'll get to in a moment. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of the show on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. We're always talking Super Friends over on Twitter at For All Mankind SF. And then finally, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Gord Tolton, David S. Gutierrez, Chuck Dill, and Stanford M. Brown for their support of the Fire and Water Network. We very much appreciate it. So that is going to do it. Thanks for listening to For All Mankind. Join us next episode when we look at Super Friends number 27, The Spacemen Who Stole Atlantis.
An FW TV podcast.